Lisa Mills, assistant professor of film at UCF, and you're listening to The Riches Documentary Podcast.
Calvary Assembly originated in Winter Park in 1953. Starting as a small church built on two lots, before I-4 had even made its way through Central Florida, Calvary Assembly grew to become an extremely influential landmark in Central Florida's history. Multiple institutions, buildings, publications, television channels, and significant people found their origins at Calvary Assembly, including Benny Hinn. To speak on the influence of evangelicals in Central Florida, including the institution of Calvary Assembly and the infamous Crusades of Benny Hinn, four individuals share their experiences with evangelicalism in Central Florida. The four voices you will hear in this documentary include Dr. Michael Hammond, Jack Norman, Jean Polino, and Debbie Carey. Dr. Michael Hammond, professor of history, Southeastern University, has done extensive research on American evangelicalism and presently teaches several history courses on evangelicalism. To help put Calvary Assembly and Benny Hinn in context, Dr. Hammond discusses and explains evangelicals and their beliefs.
Well, part of the way to define evangelical and what that term means, it's really a term that today we use as much as an adjective as we do as a noun. It seems like evangelical is a label that's attached to anything. There's evangelical television, evangelical music, evangelical theme parks, evangelical restaurants, almost anything you can think of, you can attach evangelical to it. But the origin of the term itself really comes from the Greek word for the gospel, evangel, meaning good news. And really that does give us a clue as to what people who self-identify as evangelicals are about, what they stand for. And so the new evangelicals of the 1950s believed very strongly that they had to do something in the culture with their Christian conviction, that they had to take the gospel, the evangel, beyond their own church walls or their own Sunday schools or their own missionary endeavors. They believed that their faith had to have some impact on the world around them, and the culture around them.
Dr. Hammond elaborates on evangelicalism.
A megachurch, you know, if you look at the demographics and the people, the scholars who do good demographic studies of religion, I believe they typically categorize a megachurch as one that has a threshold of about 2,000 people a week who come through their doors. Now, and we typically measure that on Sunday mornings. It's kind of hard to pin that 2,000 people number down, however, because one of the characteristics of a megachurch is not just their size, but typically the breadth of different opportunities and programs that they offer. And so you might have 2,000 people on a Sunday, but that might be at 3, 4, 5 different services. You might even find that calling it a weekly service a Sunday is limiting too. Some mega churches have services on Saturday evenings and Sunday mornings and Sunday afternoons, Sunday nights. A lot of mega churches refuse to even count numbers, but they'll count families or households. There's different ways to keep those numbers. But typically we say around 2,000 or more on a weekend would get you into that mega church category. So it does have something to do with size. The name itself implies that, you know, we've supersized the church. It's a mega church. But it's beyond that. It's really a church that typically encompasses not just the standard classic church building with the steeple and all the people inside, but it encompasses a major campus, almost like a small college or university, with multiple buildings, usually rec center, restaurants. Some of the biggest ones have elaborate food courts that would rival any shopping mall in America. And on that note, even a lot of them have commercial ventures, stores, and gift shops that are open not only Sunday but throughout the week. Some mega churches even have franchised Subway or Starbucks to come in and to open up an outlet in their lobby. And what the megachurch typically wants to do is to serve not just the church community itself with the typical weekend service, but to provide a week-long series of events and programming to really cultivate the life of the people in the church, as well as, and I think certain churches do this better than others, but as well as the life of the people in their surrounding area or in their surrounding neighborhood. So, you know, when you think of a megachurch, it really breaks the mold if your vision of a church is the sort of traditional idea of a pastor and the congregation. Some megachurches, you'll have full-time ministry staff who do nothing more but organize intramural leagues and sports events, or they may organize music events only. So the churches have become big enough that they're able to specialize.
There are many examples of how Calvary has made a significant change in the Orlando and Greater Central Florida area. Debbie Carey, administrator of Calvary Assembly, is the megachurch's historian, and she organized Calvary's 50th anniversary production, celebrating the rich history that the institution has shared with Central Florida.
Calvary has affected Central Florida in numerous ways. They've had a benevolence ministry for years, which has helped the needy, and its doors have been open to not just the needy in our church, but anybody in the community that needed help. Food and clothing, Thanksgiving baskets, Christmas help. We go and pick them up downtown twice a week, bring them in, give them a hot meal. Give them on Sundays, we give them breakfast, bring them to church, bring them back, give them lunch, they get a shower. We have Bible classes for them, we have life management classes for them, you know, to try to help them get back into society. And we've had a number of people that have been able to do that, so it's very rewarding to see that. That's just one of the things. We have a daycare and a preschool. We still continue to hold events for the community. We have a fall festival every year. We have an Easter extravaganza, and anybody is welcome to, participate in those. We've had a number of awesome Christmas or Easter productions. They've done that for years. Calvary's been famous for its presentations. And also another thing that was started here, which has also gone on to be a worldwide ministry, is Crown Financial Ministries. Iglesia El Calvario also is a Spanish church that is in Orlando, has been for many years. It also has its roots at Calvary. Calvary had a school, Calvary Assembly School, for a number of years back in the 80s and 90s, and it was right through high school.
Another impactful product that arose out of Calvary Assembly in Orlando was Charisma Magazine. In the summer of 1975, Charisma Magazine was first published in the church. Soon it would grow to circulate both all across the nation and even internationally to over 40 different countries, becoming an extremely influential publication. Jack Norman was on the board of directors of Calvary Assembly and is now an elder. He has been at Calvary Assembly since the mid-70s.
Steve Strang was a member of the church here, and he was a reporter for Orlando Sentinel. And he started it as a house magazine here to give out to the members of the church. And but then he requested, it started moving and getting bigger, and other churches were requesting the magazine. So he asked if he could take it, do it on his own.
Crown Financial has been a ministry that came out of Orlando and now holds worldwide influence.
Well, there was a man in the church here. His name was Howard Dayton. You can find him on the radio on WTLN. I know he's broadcast nationwide, but he was a businessman here in Orlando, was a member of Calvary, and he wanted to know what the Bible said about the finances. And he and another man got together, and a few business people in the church eventually started to, he would have financial ministries maybe once every quarter or something like that, where people could come and he would do teaching on what the Bible says about your finances. And eventually he made somebody said you ought to teach it as a regular ministry. So he started teaching it, and he would give out, just print out some, run off some copies for the teaching. It developed, and he wrote a couple of books, and it started growing.
On September 6, 1982, the Calvary Towers were built to provide affordable housing for seniors and the disabled. The construction of the Calvary Towers in Orlando was so significant that it drew the attention of Vice President George H.W. Bush, who, with his wife Barbara, officially dedicated the Calvary Towers.
Calvary Towers was actually a vision, part of the vision of Calvary Assembly. There was some of the leadership felt that we needed to have a place for seniors and the disabled, in close proximity to the church property. And it is actually now a separate entity from Calvary, run separately, has its own administration. It is HUD housing. But at the time it was open, Calvary was the initiator behind it, got it going and, got it built. And Vice President George H.W. Bush came down to dedicate it, be a part of the official opening ceremony. At that time, it was probably significant because I think there probably weren't that many of them around then. Now, since then, there's been, probably hundreds of them built. But at that time, it was probably significant because there wasn't that many around. And that would have been a large structure at that time in the 80s.
WTGL-TV Channel 52, which broadcasts from Central Florida, also came out of Calvary. It was the first full-time Christian TV station in East Central Florida.
One of our board members actually heard about a TV station in Cocoa that was for sale, and he really felt that Calvary should have a TV station, so he brought that idea back to the church, and they raised the funds to purchase that station, moved it to Orlando. At that time, it was known as TV 52. It is now known as Good Life Broadcasting. It's a separate entity, and it has its offices right now in Lake Mary.
Gene Polino is the chairman of Channel 52. He used to be the business administrator of Calvary Assembly and Benny Hinn.
We went to the board of Calvary, and they at first were not interested because it was a lot of money to get it started. But some businessmen in the church that I contacted and asked them whether they would put up some front money and sign some notes and all to get it going, agreed to it. And then when that was decided and we actually went ahead and applied for the station, Calvary got behind us then, the rest of the ministry and all. And the pastor was always for it, Roy Hardin was always for it. And they actually paid the bills for the beginning of the station, the formation of it. It took about a year and a half or so to get through all the regulations and the applications and all. And Calvary paid the bills for that. And They were right. What we were told would cost maybe $50,000 or $60,000 ended up costing $150,000. But they put the bill, and of course they were the first station. Then we put a TV ministry in the church too, and they were the first station, first programmer, I should say, that came on the air. And the station then repaid the money to them that they had put up front by giving them the in return for time, an in-kind exchange. So they got free time, or almost free time, to repay the money that they had put in the station.
Thank you for listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Feel free to contact us with any questions or comments on the program that you just heard. Please join us for the next episode, Calvary Assembly and Benny Hinn, Evangelicals in Central Florida, Part 2.